In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a 7-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Emil Heskey, and you're listening to the guys of Coppin Crackers.
Episode of Carpet Fracca, powered by Social Media Group. I'm your host, Krish, and this week I am joined by Ellis, Mark, and Alec. Just before we get stuck into this week's episode, just want to plug our Discord channel, the Touchline Media Group Discord channel. It's just a fantastic way to get in contact with other like-minded fans. So if you're a United fan, you can get in contact with other United fans. If you're a Liverpool fan, of course, you can get in contact with other Liverpool fans. And we've got a whole host of other options on there as well. So if you're a basketball fan, we have stuff for courtside. If you're an F1 fan, we have pit stop stuff in there as well. So it's just a really cool way to get involved and connect with everyone else who's listening to Touchline podcast. So do head over to, I think we'll try and plug the link we have for this underneath the usual tweet that goes out. Of course, as well, we have the Touchline Fracas YouTube channel, which is generating just so much amazing content. And if you're not subscribing, then I really don't know what you're doing at this point, because I've been on about it for the better part of 5 weeks. And if you're not subscribed by now, that's on you. And you're missing out on some quality stuff. And of course, last but not least, we do have the Cop End Fracas Patreon page. So if you're a fan of what you hear from us on a weekly basis here at Cop End, please do head over to patreon.com/CopEndFracas. And from as little as £3 a month, you can subscribe to a whole host of extra content and features that is enabled for our Patreon members. So let's get stuck into it. So we're recording this straight after Liverpool have beaten Ajax 1-0, which is how football works. Mark, I'll come to you on this one. Fairly dull game for the most part, but the Kirby boys, they really showed up this evening, didn't they?
Man, the young boys, man. Joe's doing it again with another winner. Nico looking great. Klopp ran straight over to Keller after his save against Klaus Huntelaar. He looks really, really solid as a backup goalkeeper. He was so much more sure than Adrian is. Like, even balls into the box, he just claimed them really, really well. And I think that was a performance that will stand him in good stead moving forward. He'll just continue to build on it. Nico's had his troubles, as you can imagine, his past starts against Atlanta and Brighton, but he was really, really solid today. Almost had like an amazing passage of play where he flicked over Taliafico. Taliafico went skidding past him, sent him shots, passed it down the wing. He even got an assist today for Curtis Jones's goal. And we already know Jones, like, we glow so much about him every single time he plays. He's so assured on the ball. He could have probably had 3 goals today. He had a chance early on in the game where he took it, I believe, on his left foot and didn't really connect too cleanly, hit the post straight after that. And then his actual goal where he was just determined, like, he was concentrated on the flat of the ball. Obviously, there was a keeper goalkeeping error there, and keeper made a ridiculous mistake, but he kept his eye on the ball and he was able to get the goal and take advantage of that.
Yeah, no, a really good performance from Nico Williams. We'll touch on it later on, but it was a little bit of a difficult one for him at the weekend at Brighton. So it was nice to see him get a really good run out for the full 90 and put on a fantastic display from what we've seen from him from last season as well. Anik, just to touch on one of the points that Mark made as well, I'm going to completely butcher the pronunciation of his first name. Kieran Kelleher?
I'll take that. That's cool.
Close enough. We'll promise, though, if you are listening, Kelleher, Mr. Kelleher, we will get that pronunciation down sooner rather than later. I mean, we did hear some, obviously, rumours from last night. Granted, they weren't the best sources or whatnot. That thank God he wasn't playing. That Alisson would not be available for this game. And we were all thinking that Adrian was going to be in goal. And we were in a bit of a panic and a tizzy, as per history dictates. But, I mean, we saw Kelleher come into the starting 11. And from what we've seen from him before to what we saw tonight, you saw less of a boy, more of a man, because there were some fantastic reaction saves and just all-round general sturdy goalkeeping.
Yeah, definitely. I think he came in today. I think, to be honest with you, I'd never really heard of his performances. Can't really remember the last time he played. I think someone mentioned in the group chat, it was a game against Aston Villa last year where they played the kids and we got hit for 6 or 7. But you know what? He came in today and he really stepped up. He showed just a degree of confidence. And when he collected the ball, where his distribution was good, that save was world-class. Like, to save from a top-quality striker in the final few minutes and come through like that was top. I think I'm much more comfortable having him in there as opposed to Adrian. You can see what he offers. And I think the fact that Klopp went straight over to him at the final whistle just pays a testament to his performance. Really assured there, really happy with his performance, to be honest with you. Just good to have someone there that can step in. Obviously, with Alisson's injury, we're not sure how many games he may play or even if Adrian may play. But definitely, I was really impressed with his performance today. Champions League. Yeah.
So while we're still on Keller, I feel like that was reminiscent of Adrian's goal that he conceded against Dominic Calvert-Lewin, where it was straight at him, a powerful header straight at him, and he just conceded it. Yeah, but that was really, really good to see that he just parried it away. And the strike from, the Moroccan guy, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but the strike in the first half where he tipped it round the post with his right hand. That was a great save as well. And being, I believe, 22, and which is quite young for a keeper, he still has a lot of time to grow and he can be Alisson's understudy and learn so much from who some people would consider the best keeper in the world.
Yeah, just to touch on the Alisson injury just quickly, it looks like he probably won't be able to play Wolves at the weekend, which is a bit of a pain in the arse, really. Obviously, he probably wouldn't have played against Michelin next week now, considering that we qualified. So it'd be the match after that in the Premier League, which I'm drawing a blank on who we do play. Is it Spurs?
Fulham.
No, okay. Fulham first, then Spurs.
This weekend?
Fulham. Next weekend, Fulham.
Yeah.
So if he can get back for the Fulham game, that'd be a fairly good one. Historically, I mean, after last night's result for Fulham, you would have thought that would have been a game where they probably wouldn't have been peppering the goal. But, I mean, after what they did to Brendan Rodgers' Leicester last night, it's a bit of a difficult one. With Kelleher, I mean, there were some performances last night where you just saw this, little boy in goal. He didn't look fairly big, he didn't look fairly imposing. You're thinking, with a goalkeeper especially, you want your goalkeeper to be really big, really imposing, to come out, head stuff, head and push stuff away with ease. But no, he looked like a completely different guy this evening. And I think one of the most assuring things was as well, obviously, with every game that we're playing from now on this season, we're playing with a makeshift back four. There were no real communication errors, which was really good. And everyone just looked fairly comfortable in terms of passing the ball around and looked comfortable with him in between the sticks, which I think is massively important too. So a fantastic performance from him, and for me personally, I would probably say he's my man of the match, which probably tells you how bit of a boring of a game it was, in all honesty. Els, I'll come to you for the last of the Kirby boys who played tonight. Curtis Jones. There's been a little bit of a theme recently with Curtis Jones in terms of general performance play. and the level of maturity that he's been showing in these performances. And again, this evening, he grabs a goal with a fantastic assist from Neco, whether he meant it or not, it all counts. But yeah, another fantastic performance from him. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was impressed. Last season, when he came into the team, my one criticism of him was that he dwelled onto the ball for too long, and he always tried to be the main guy in the men's team. Things that he could do in a youth team, which is fair. He can be the guy because he's head and shoulders above everyone. But in the men's team, no one's going to give you that time. And it seems like over the summer, over the short preseason that they had, he's learned that he doesn't have to do that. Just keep it simple. With that, the maturity has come in because he moves the ball ever so quickly. He runs into space. He always knows what he wants to do. He never dwells on the ball. And even with his fourth goal today, running at a back post, it's nothing that he's also going to learn as time goes on to get him amongst the goals. So, yeah, it was another short performance from him. Every time he's come into the team, he hasn't really looked out of place, to be fair. And with the young boys, they're talented. So when they play with better players, their quality shines through. It's unfortunate that players like Nico Williams, they play in like makeshift teams, and then it's a bit hard for them. It's a bit hard for him, per se. Obviously, the talent level is different with Curtis. Curtis can be in a makeshift team and still his talent shines through. But sometimes he still struggles as well because the team is getting oppressed. But yeah, obviously, what more can we say about him? He's got a bright future ahead of him, like the rest of the boys. Just needs to stay focused and just keep on going. But obviously, with him, we won't talk too much. You know, obviously, other teams like to big up their boys quickly. But with us, we just let them do their thing. Yeah.
Can I just say one last thing on Curtis real quickly? I feel like when you're playing a midfield three, you need to have someone who makes those late runs into the box or is prepared to get forward. And it is so exciting it makes me so happy to see someone like Curtis Jones coming into the squad, especially when the people that we have who should be that incisive or should be that creator are not available at the moment. So it's specifically Keita and Thiago. And even though he can create from deep, similar to them, not to the same quality, but similar to them, he possesses that drive to go forward and that drive to score goals, which Thiago doesn't particularly have and Naby doesn't particularly have. So he's just another weapon in the toolbox, I guess. Weapon in Arsenal, even.
Yeah, I think just to add on to what Marco said there, I think whenever he just picks up the ball, he looks like he wants to make things happen. And having Wijnaldum and Henderson there as a base today, I think really allowed him to do that. Whenever CJ got on the ball, he was just looking to make things happen. He can also he's also got a good shot from range, so that's another sort of weapon that he can use. But I just think his performance today was top. Like we needed the players to step up, and arguably the youth team players came through. You know, Nico Williams, Kelleher and Jones. And they really made a statement. And I keep going back to this. It's on a Champions League night as well, and a big game. So fantastic from the guys.
Definitely. Quickly on Kelleher before we move on. There's something I noticed today that he's equally adept at kicking it with his left foot and his right foot, which is pretty decent, to be fair. I like that, the confidence to do it, which was really, really good. And going back to what you said, which is like he looks like a man. And I think what they've done with him, they've made him add weight and put in a bit of mass before coming into the men's game because it's hard. It's hard, like, defending. You've got like 6'5", 17-stone defenders running at you. You've got to have a bit of something about you. So, yeah, I think that's probably what they were doing. They were just helping him to grow into his body, get his basics. Like, I think he had the basics there, but it's just he looked paper thin. So,
yeah.
It's good to see.
When the ball did come back to him and he was unsure, he booted it long. And that's all we've been asking Adrian to do. If you're unsure about anything, get the fuck out of there. And that was so... Every single time he did it, I did a little clap. Like, I jumped around a little bit. Because there was one where he did it, and Mane ended up controlling the ball. And that's all you need to do sometimes. Get away from the goal, get into the opposition's half of the pitch, and they might make mistakes. But don't put the onus on yourself all the time to make that mistake, similar to what Adrian does, where against Aston Villa, he doesn't need to make that pass to Gomez. He could have just booted it for that Aston Villa's first goal.
I think it's interesting. Do you reckon they just showed him on loop, like kind of Clockwork Orange style? Adrian's pass against Atletico Madrid that led to the bloody goal. They just like showed that and say, whatever you do, please don't do this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, that's a really interesting point though from Mark, in terms of sometimes you just need someone to boot it long, and we do miss that kind of long ball from the back as well, with no Gomez and no Virgil van Dijk especially.
Yeah. I'm sure, like you say, Chris, they probably strapped him down to the seat, flipped like he's early, and he's like, for 48 hours, you're sat in there. But yeah, man, that's what you do need, man. You just get up. And then with that, the team will press anyway. So once the ball's there, the team's looking to press anyway. So that's going to help the team. So we're really proud of that. The free play. Then Reece Williams comes on. That's a good act of faith from Klopp, to bring in someone so young to like just shore up the defence. That used to be Lovren's role, just to see out the game. And I think he won a header as well, which I really like about Reece Williams. He wins headers. So quietly, we will say that the future is bright, quietly.
And we'll quietly also say, Adrian, you're done out here. Sorry, bro. Sorry, bro. Just the way it goes.
It just seems to be the end of the road for old Adrian. But I mean, he's done well. Done right for himself, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's got a league, yeah. Can't complain.
Just on Golly. So we've got Wolves next, with Alisson not being fit. Sorry, Chris, to take over host duties somewhat.
No, go for it.
Got Wolves next, then Mitchell and then Fulham. Do you think Keller should play all three games, even if Alisson is fit?
No, if Alisson's fit, you're getting back in goal.
As soon as possible?
Yeah, expedition.
Because he might be fit for Mitchell and.
Yeah, you put him in goal, man.
You put him in goal.
I'm not sure about Mitchell and.
Wait until Spurs to bring back Alisson in.
Nah, it's too many games not playing.
Nah, I play for Fulham.
Are you all playing for Mitchell and?
I wouldn't play for Mitchell.
We're qualified.
I'll let Keller sit there, man.
Yeah, but if he's had a week off, if he's had a couple of weeks off, I would have said.
I think in a season where rest and emphasis on rest is so important, I think if you can get a few more days of R&R in and then get really kind of like just ready for Fulham, that'd be fantastic. Just before we kind of push on with one of the other talking points from the Ajax game, I just want to pull out some Curtis Jones facts and stats from his performance against Ajax. 79% passing completion, 4 shots on goal. One goal, of course. He hit the woodwork in the first half, which would have been a bloody good goal. 2 successful dribbles. Won 4 out of his 5 aerial duels as well. Central midfielder. Wow. That's really impressive. 2 clearances and an interception. Not a bad evening out for young Curtis Jones. But yeah, one of the other points I wanted to touch on, just before we kind of change the conversation over to the Brighton game, was Sadio Mane. Anyone, I mean, we slightly touched on it, but I think it's a little bit of a harsh question to say, but is anyone concerned about Sadio Mane's recent form? We've kind of like being capsized with the performance this evening, because for me, he looked really lethargic and he looked knackered.
He probably did. He always has this kind of run in a season where for a few games he doesn't score, doesn't look too potent. He probably does need a rest. Probably does need a couple games out. But with him being so dangerous, when can we do that? But then we've just to come in, so we can afford at least one person to sit out and rest. I'm a bit worried because the games are coming quick and fast. When does his form pick up?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And the way the season is now, if you lose like a couple games, you could find yourself in full sight. Do you know what I'm saying? He's a player who will pick up anyway. What I do like about Mane and Salah, when they're not playing well, they still get goals. So hopefully he will come in. But 1-9 is not really Mane form. Well, hopefully he'll pick up. Well, in the short term, I'm a bit worried.
You know what? it didn't come across my mind until today when someone mentioned it in the group. And I sort of feel like Mane's overall performance has been quite good. I feel like there are times where a sharper Mane scores certain chances that he has miscontrolled or he hasn't picked up the right, well, made the right decision. But today, I think he could have scored. And that's mainly down to, do you remember Henderson's cross where Henderson whipped it just above his head? I think Trent in that position smashes it along the floor. Mane scored it easily. And then we're not having this conversation anymore. But he's still getting into the places to have those opportunities. He had about 2-3 opportunities today where if he had a better touch, he would probably score. There was the one where he was sent through, I believe, by Henderson. He miscontrolled it. And then the right back came around and whipped their leg around to it. But there was quite a few like that. And Mane is so dangerous, even when he isn't scoring, his ability to take people on one-on-one, his link up with Robertson, as we saw several times tonight. He's such a great person to have in the team, even though he isn't scoring. I think all it takes is a little bit of rest. I would rest him for Midtjylland. I would rest him for Fulham. So I would start maybe Origi for Midtjylland. I would start maybe Jota on the left for Fulham. And then I'll bring him back in for Spurs, raring to go so he can rip apart Ori.
And just before, just before Andy kind of interjects on the conversation there, I want to say, I think you raised a really good point there, Mark, as well. I think in one of the departments, we're incredibly blessed in at the moment, especially without injuries, touch wood. We have the affordability to kind of rest Sadio Mane for a week if we wanted to. So we can play Jota out on the left. You can even bring Minamino in as the fold. So from that point of view, we are definitely kind of safe from that angle if we do want to give him a little bit of a breather. When I spit bars in a
rave, man, I go hard last time. Hello, Mead here from Touchline Frackers. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. So businesses all over the globe have been challenged to be their most efficient, and that means that every single hire that they have is critical. Indeed are the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the right person for your business. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out for a free $75 credit at indeed.com/bluewire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to indeed.com/bluewire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. When I spit bars in a rave, man, I go hard
last stand ten. Yeah, I think on the Mane point, to be honest with you, I'm not worried at all about Mane. I know he'll come good. I know that for me, I always say this to my brother whenever I'm watching games with him. He's like a fullback's nightmare, and he's still showing that. Like, I know the game against Leicester, he had Fofana on toast, and obviously he wasn't up to the levels that he usually shows, but he still, even today, he was showing that he was getting in, he was making it a nightmare for the defenders. It's probably just his final touch or final ball that needs to be worked on. But I don't want to cause too much of a stir here, but if you're going to suggest that Mane's form or is a concern, then you can obviously say the same about Salah as well, because Salah missed. No, because he missed three clear-cut chances today. Mm-hmm. He was in one-on-one. He had the chance to shoot. But Salah's form hasn't been the best either.
Yeah, it has. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Hold on. What about in the past three games? Ever since Salah's come back from international break, he hasn't.
Yeah, said, but
he plays
only two.
He played three.
He played last week against 60 minutes of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And the Fulham one was the Fulham on was the full 90. And he played all right there. I mean, we've got to remember he did add the ball at the back of the net. Granted,
so did Mane.
Yeah, but Mane was clearly offside. Which we'll talk about later on.
With Mane, the thing is, it is his overall game. Like today, he wasn't good. His touch wasn't there. He was making a wrong decision. Did you remember when he ran into the box and he just fell down? And Salah kind of looked at him like, bro, get up the floor, man. What are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, there was times where he could play Salah in and he just divvied on the ball. He couldn't beat his man at times. Even against Brighton, when he came on, his touches were loose. He wasn't the assured Mane that we know. He, against Atalanta, everybody was rubbish. So even this season, for you to suggest that Salah's form has been bad is wrong, because Salah's like, he's got 8 goals.
No. I'm not saying this season. I'm saying since he's come back. Since he's come back from the international break, he's not looked the same player.
I'm sure he's got 1 goal.
No, he hasn't. Apart from that, Atalanta, he didn't play well. For, I'll give you that. He only played 16 minutes. Against Brighton, he played really well. Nobody was just...
He got an assist at Brighton.
A very, very good assist as well. That pass was a short pass, but the ability to do that touch,
right, that's fine. A decent assist against Brighton, okay. But what about today? He had three clear cut chances today, and you would have expected him to have buried them. Oh, come on, would you have expected him to bury those chances today?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, of course. And I also think he didn't get the ball when he wanted the ball sometimes. There was times when he was pointing for the ball, and the ones where he was pointing for the ball, he would have been one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And for me, Salah's not missing 3 1-on-1s. He'll score at least one of those one-on-ones, innit? If they play the ball to him every single time he was asking for it, when it was evident they could, then yeah. There was a couple of times in the first half where Jota didn't play the ball to him, and you could tell he was getting frustrated by that, but Jota's still getting used to the team. So I understand a bit of miscommunication there, and Jota still wanted to get on the score sheet himself because he's been in a fantastic run. But I'm not too worried about Salah at all, man. Salah gets goals. Even when he's not playing well, he's still a bags man. Sorry, before we move on from Ajax, I want to shout out me and Chris's boy. He came on, had a decent little cameo, almost scored himself. That's some nice little touches. You know who I'm on about.
Is that Bobby?
Yeah, man, Bobby. I feel like he played.
He done a Mazzaline when he got the ball. I think he'd be like free man.
When he picked the ball up in our own half, being free man, running through. And the pass was fantastic. Was it Mane who kind of...
Yes, it was.
But no, I think it's amazing what you can do when you give players some rest, isn't it? You know what I mean?
That's what money needs, the sharpness is back from Bobby.
He was actually sprinting, you know, like I saw him make his way into the box really, really fast.
Yeah,
and it's something that we haven't seen for quite some time. I've seen him jogging behind the play sometimes this season, and it's really frustrating to watch. But today, the movement's back. Maybe Jota's inclusion and him being on a bench now has just sparked something into him. But who knows, innit? Hopefully, we could see some more of him.
It's no different to any other workplace, isn't it, really? I mean, if someone comes in and they're kind of like performing to the levels you currently expect to be at, but you're not at, you're going to light a bit of a fire under your ass, and you're going to be performing a bit more better, and you're going to put a little bit more effort in. Not to say that he's not putting the effort in at all. You know, that's not what we're saying here, but it's going to spur you on just to kind of go that extra 50 yards and do something a little bit special. But just to bring everything a bit full circle, really. I think just adding points earlier, there was one shot at the nearly kind of like end of the game. It was probably about 82 minutes when Salah was kind of through on goal. It hit it wide, and you would have expected him to score from there. So I think there is kind of like a scenario where, you know, when you weigh it up, you could say that he's probably not performing well. But again, with attackers, the currency is goals. So if you have a shit game and you score or you get an assist, you can parlay that off and say that's a good performance. But it's just how it is, really, isn't it? At the end of the day, and
Fernandez on that one still,
bro. That guy, inevitable. He's inevitable. He's a scary.
Let's not start that debate.
I know we don't have time, but we can go anytime you want. You know.
Let's not start that debate.
Yeah, let's not start that debate. That debate, bloody hell. But yeah, on to Saturday's 12:30 kickoff, which, you know, Jurgen Klopp was, to say, fair to say, he was unpleased with the scheduling there, which we'll touch on a little bit later on. In terms of the actual performance, let's start off. For the first 35 minutes, Brighton played really well.
Agreed. I thought first 10 minutes, I thought we came into view, it was really good. We were playing some good stuff.
Agreed.
Yeah, we was popping the ball around. Then, obviously, the home team gets into the game. It's their pitch anyway, so they're gonna pop it around. And I thought they played well, to be fair. They were getting in behind us. Connolly was just hanging on the centre-backs and was able
to... Oh, bloody hell. Connolly turns to fucking, Neymar, didn't he?
Yeah, man. He just hangs off the centre-backs. And that ball was always there for him. He had a chance where he tried to open up his body and slip it past Alisson. Yeah, which was unlucky, to be fair. They got a penalty. It was a mistake from Williams there, a bit of naivety.
It was rash. Yeah.
It was very rash. Yeah, he tried to get back on the ball and gave it away. All in all, I thought we'd done okay to try and secure the result up until, 90-something minutes where...
Yeah.
Yeah, then Robbo loses... I'll say Robbo loses his head.
Well, let's just look into the actual decisions themselves then, because I think for the first one, the offside, and this is where it kind of really gets in your craw a bit, really, isn't it? It's you're trying to decide the slimmest of margins. With all due respect, is imagery that you conspiracy theorists have when they're saying that, oh, look, it's Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. It's insane. How we're in like a £1 billion industry and we haven't got HD cameras to kind of give you the actual pixel footage that you need to do these things is beyond confusing. It's insane.
You know what? On top of that, they drew the line from Salah's foot. And then was it Ben White, I believe?
Yeah.
They didn't do it from Ben White's shoulder. They did it from his foot, and his shoulder was leaning a bit forward. So why are you doing it, like, let's say for Ollie Watkins last night, I believe, his one was drawn from his shoulder. So why are you going to use certain people's body parts for certain things? Like, use the bit that's closest to the goal. Don't just pick and choose when you use certain things. And don't just pick and choose when you call VAR decisions like that.
That's it, man. Because I'm watching it and I'm thinking, surely, if you're going to get... You might just give the advantage to the attacker because he's running in on goal. And it's so, minute. You know what I mean? The what you're judging it on and what you're measuring is so small. So what's the point? And, again, unfortunately, we've been hit twice with that, like with the Mane one and now with the Salah one. It didn't really make no sense. It didn't really make no sense, man. Couldn't have found from it, but hey.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it really kind of stuck in my... It's looking micro, really. I mean, it's a fantastic piece of football as well for Liverpool. And it is a bit of a one-off moment in the game where we score that goal. And again, I have to say, fantastic football. The pass from Bobby to Salah was just absolutely on the money. Finish was fantastic. And you do wonder where we go from there. More than likely, we grab the ground by the scruff of the neck, we make it possibly 2-0 by half-time. And we cruise and we're saying the Reds were boss, aren't they? Considering that we had a game earlier on in the week. The Sadio Mane one, I have no qualms on that whatsoever. He was so blatantly offside that you can't even disagree with it. But then we come to the coup de grace, really, of the VAR decisions. The late penalty, which Pascal Gross converted. It is a penalty. I think we can all kind of agree with saying that it is apparently, and it is rash by Robertson to kind of go for the ball like that. But Anik, I'll let you kind of let you lead on this one. Your initial thoughts on what happened?
So I think in the build up to the goal, I wasn't too confident. I felt throughout, especially the first half, we were on the racks a bit. But then we shored it up in the second half. So obviously, based on the first half, I was like, okay, they can score any time. But then as the game progressed in the second half, I thought, okay, actually, we're going to see this game out. It's going to be like 18, 19, 19, 20 Liverpool, we're gonna see the game out of him and we'll be fine. But I just don't know where to start. I think it was just it was a penalty without a doubt, but it was just a moment of madness, really. I mean, he wasn't really in a goal scoring position. Welbeck, he comes in, connects with him, and you know, without a doubt, it's a penalty. I think Henderson, correct me guys if I'm wrong, I think after the game he said that it was a soft penalty or it shouldn't have been given.
I think Klopp said it was a penalty.
Yeah, I think Welbeck said Welbeck in his press cut in the BT for one after, it was a bit of a soft penalty, but
soft penalty, yeah.
Yeah.
And then obviously Klopp was asked the question and he said, yeah, it was a penalty. And I think that's what triggered his reaction with Des Kelly. So look, at the end of the day, we got a similar penalty given for us against, I think it was West Ham. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And, you know, it's a penalty. To be honest with you, it's a really tough one to take. I didn't like the fact at all that we got a draw. I mean,
the thing with the penalty, we've all been told with VAR, you know, yes, they changed the rules throughout the season and, you know, in terms of leniency and whatnot. Was that clear and obvious enough to be overturned? Because the ref didn't really look to give it two stars, really. And well, I always think as well, when you slow stuff down, it looks way worse than it is in actual motion.
Way,
you
know, worse. In full speed, yeah, Robertson swings for the ball. And the only reason Danny Welbeck gets there is because he's so rangy. Like, you know how Danny Welbeck is. We've seen him at Arsenal. And the way he carries himself, and he's quite a tall boy, so he stretched out and got there just before. So I want to shoot Robertson some bell. Like, he's trying to go for the ball. It's late in the game. He's thinking, get the ball the fuck out of there. And unfortunately, that happens. Ideally, like Robertson said, he saw the Adama Traore one on Sunday, and I believe he mentioned someone else. And earlier this season, we saw Maguire on Aspie that wasn't given. All we want is consistency across the board, innit? While I didn't want to draw and while the VAR was hard to take, we want to make sure that if we get given that, so if Brighton get given that and something like that comes up, let's say in 2 weeks' time against us, we want to be given that. Make sure every single team is given the same thing. Don't just pick and choose when you decide a decision needs to be overturned when decisions are quite similar in their respect.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I agree, man. But the only thing for me was the only thing I can say for the penny was that when Welbeck got his foot on the ball, he wasn't going to be able to go get it. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So once he's gone, he now needs to get round Robertson to get the ball. So that's the only thing that you can say. But that doesn't really mean anything anyway because Robertson kicked his foot, so at the end of the day, man, it's a pin to pen. You can't really do too much about it. But like Mark said, we just want consistency within the decisions that these refs are given. And everyone keeps on saying VAR's not working and VAR's not good. The technology is absolutely fine. It's always the user. It's like when you go into work and you switch on your computer and whatever. Obviously, I always say like, oh, have you switched on and switched off again? Because it could be. So it tends to be the user of the technology. And with VAR, that's what it is, that the referees in this country are bottom of the barrel. And the only referee I've seen worse at the minute, the African Cup of Nations, bruv. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's where the refereeing is at the minute, fam. Terrible.
It's VAR might be our biggest competitor in the title race this season, to be fair.
It really is, man. I don't see anyone in the league threatening us at this point in time. Chelsea look good. I will say they're probably title challengers this season. Spurs look good. They're probably title challengers themselves this season. But I still don't think either of them can match us when we get into gear. And we haven't really got into gear this season.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. And I think just to go back to the point that Els made, football's a very binary sport, isn't it, really, when you think about it? We have a certain set of rules that we all know that we have to abide by. and sometimes that we and context isn't actually applied in those situations. You know what I mean? So, like I said earlier, when you're slowing something down, it's always going to look worse. Always going to look worse. And I get what Robertson was doing. It's later in the game, just trying to clear your lines. You're trying to go for the ball, smack it for 40 yards downfield, just so it's out of play, just out of risk, out of harm. But ultimately, when you do that and you do catch the opponent, that's going to be a penalty. And I guess obviously the contentious point as well is that if you do that anywhere else on the pitch, it's probably a yellow card. Well, not a yellow card, it's probably just a free kick. And we're all thinking, fucking hell, what are you doing that for? But when you're in, when you're in your own box, it's a bit of a painful one to take. And it's in regards to the actual kind of operations of VAR as well. It's everything's so subjective too, because it just feels like every time, it's not even like the referees aren't overturning the decisions now either. So when they go to the monitor, that initial decision is going to stick now. I mean, when was the last time you saw someone go to the monitor and it was overturned properly?
Yeah, because they don't want to look like they made the wrong decision, so they don't want to go over to the monitor and be like, oh, actually, you know what? I want to change my decision now, unless it's like blatant. They've completely messed up. But look, it's one of those. And I suppose from the game, the one that probably does stand out to me and where you can apply context was the example Marco gave, where they drew the lines against Ben White's body for Salah's offside. Like, why are you taking? Was it his right foot? Where he was standing on his
Salah's
left side.
Right foot and Ben White's left foot, but his shoulder was past his left foot.
Yeah, it was past beyond. It was like, come on, you have to apply a bit of context. You know which part of his body is closer to the goal. And that probably leads on to what El said as well. Like, the program's there, the technology is there, it's how you're using it. Like, if you're trained on how to use it properly, then I'm sure you can easily get it right.
Can't believe that we haven't got some form of like Hawkeye thing that we can use on the sidelines to see what is an actual straight line instead of doing it on a bloody 2D image. It boggles the mind, man. Billion pounds port, and for some reason we've got porn technology hammer work going on. What is happening? Like, Jesus. That 80s porn fucking software.
Mental,
the moustache and everything. It's unbelievable. It's a farce.
And the bush.
It's always a good time. It's always a good time when you're just coughing for a pass, isn't it? You never know what you're going to get. But back onto the actual performance itself. We were talking about makeshift back fours, literally just. Nat Phillips and Neco Williams with Takumi Minamino sitting in front of them was always going to be an issue for trouble. And if you're, like you said, if you're Aaron Connolly and you're looking at that, you're thinking, okay, cool, I can get some work on that side. In contrasting fortunes as well, the Neco we saw this evening compared to the Neco we saw on Saturday, 9 days apart. Now, Mark, I'll come to you on this. Nat Phillips, I thought, had a fairly, fairly decent game. Now, that is probably down to the fact that Nat Phillips was solely focusing on his game and, you know, not worrying about having Shepo Neco Williams throughout the game as well. How difficult, like we said, how difficult must it be for a young right back to just be dropped into the team without any senior help and you're being consistently targeted and ripped apart?
Yeah, because we saw when Trent was breaking through into the team, the issues that he had being dropped into the team and having to play against top quality opposition. For me personally, I felt like Minamino being on the right was a mistake. It should have been Genie. I also think you could probably have swapped Nat Phillips and Fabinho. I don't know who prefers what side, but ideally to protect Nico a bit more and to protect Nat Phillips a bit more, Nat Phillips should have been next to was it Robbo this weekend, sorry?
Robbo, yeah, Robbo. He gave him the penalty.
Yeah. Completely forgot. little man fought there still.
I don't know what happened there too.
He should have probably been next. That Phillips should have probably been next to Robbo. Fabinho should have been next to Neco Williams just to get him through the game. And Genie should have been in front of Neco to offer the same protection that Henderson offers Thiago. So, look, getting all the names mixed up right now. That Henderson offers Trent Alexander-Arnold. But Minamino midfield, that is new to us to see anyway. And I don't feel like he played well, so that didn't help Nico at all in the slightest. And again, Minamino isn't the most physical, so he's not going to be bodying up people in that respect and stopping them running at Nico. So while it was a bad performance, I feel like he's 19, he's still a young boy, he's still learning the trades, and he's just in an unfortunate situation where he has to play through a bad time for us, isn't it? So I'm not going to hold him accountable for too much, but like we have seen today, he will improve in it. He'll come eventually. I still don't think he's ready for the Premier League, and ideally I would have wanted to see him loaned out to maybe a lower league, maybe a Fulham or something like that, where he could start week in, week out and learn the trade a bit more and get a bit more game experience. But what can we do?
Yeah, I think on that point, he might just need just to get a decent run of games together, and that could just do the world of his confidence good. Because first half against Brighton, personally, I don't think he had the best half. You know, the penalty was very naive in the challenge. He didn't offer enough going forward as well in the first half. You know, a lot of our play is through the wings. And fair enough, he's not Trent Alexander-Arnold, but I just don't think he was getting himself down that side of the pitch enough to offer an attacking outlet there. Got hooked at half-time, and obviously Milner came on and shored up the defence. And I think that's what really helped Nat Phillips. I think he grew into the game as the second half went on. But on the flip side, Nico's performance today was really good. Like, he kept Neres quiet most of the game. Obviously, yeah. Neres got through a couple of times, but to keep a very good European winger quiet like that was very impressive. I think he just needs a few more games, and he's still so young. It can just come with, you know, just with game time. I think he'll be able to pull through and offer enough cover there. Although when Trent is back, I would want to see him straight back in the team though.
Yeah, of course, man.
Yeah, we just had sort of from David Maddock earlier on that said Trent should be back in training from tomorrow, pretty much. So he will be in contention with playing for Wolves, which is good. Weird game, really. Brighton. Taking nothing away from Brighton, I thought they played really well. They're a really good team as well. Just in general. And you can see where a lot of their issues have come from in terms of, you know, missing big chances and not taking things by the bull of the horns. And I thought it was weird that Morpé missed the penalty. Like, he's nowhere near on target. Yeah. And just went, I've had enough of this, I'm going off. Yeah. So,
he thought he was sick, like, oh, yeah, I'm injured. No.
Yeah, no. Everyone saw that penalty miss.
He was just sitting there like, oh, I need to go home. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about Jurgen Klopp's comments after the game as well, in a very heated exchange with Des Kelly, where we've had opposition fans calling him a crybaby, amongst other things, for being fairly vocal and outspoken on player safety, which I think is something that we can all agree is a fairly important point when we're living in a COVID world now. You know, when we're seeing, you know, Newcastle, for example, having their game postponed with Aston Villa just because they've had a, you know, an outbreak of their facility. I think one of the things again, man, where are they shouting that? I can't hear it in the distance, so they're very quiet now, isn't it? I mean, we sometimes underestimate how big of a mental toll this probably takes on footballers as well, as opposed to the physical side, just before we kind of talk into that debate. You know, if you're someone like Gini Wijnaldum, you're living at home probably by yourself. I know his wife and kids, they still live in Holland for the most part. So he's just having to train and go home, and he can't see his kids. He's just focused on one thing, as football. And that's got to be really mentally draining. And, you know, we don't think of that side of football, really. Which is a little, you know, I'm definitely guilty of it. I think we're all guilty of it as football fans, that we don't think of the psychological effect that it's having on players too, as opposed to the physical things. We lost James Milner to injury in that match from a hamstring injury, and we also lost what became apparent tonight, Alisson Becker, to a hamstring injury as well from that game. So I think Jurgen was more than his rights to kind of have a go at Des Kelly, even though it did feel like, you know, when you're atting someone on Twitter, like, you know, you're an Amazon page, an Amazon admin saying, "Where the fucking hell is my parcel?" You know, this isn't the girl, this isn't the person you should be directing your anger at. But you know, I've been banging my head against the wall for the better part of 18 months now that someone's going to fucking have it. So yeah, it's just a weird one. But else, the actual comments themselves.
Obviously, I think we're all in agreement with Klopp that it made no sense playing on a Wednesday night, then playing on a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, have you, 12:30. The players should be afforded at least one day of rest, because naturally you play on a Wednesday, then Thursday will probably be what, a rest, or you have a little late training on the Thursday, then Friday you get ready for the game, then Saturday, Sunday, which makes sense. I mean, if the game was on Tuesday, I don't think Klopp would have had a problem with playing on the Saturday, because at least he's got his day of rest that he wants. And it was the preparation time. And the players need the rest, because you're going to play, then you're going to come back on a Tuesday and play again. So it made sense. Gary Neville and Carragher touched on it yesterday on Monday Night Football. Gary Neville was of the opinion that Klopp just wanted an advantage, because he believes that this season is going to be tough and he wants to win the title. Which might be right, but it's also like you're trying to think. Klopp just wants everyone to stay fit and healthy, innit? And that's what we're looking for. BT and Sky, because and the thing that got me was that Everton versus Leeds was on a Saturday night. Two teams who had not played in Europe. Why are they playing on a Saturday night? Who is well, obviously people watch Leeds and Everton, so I'm not gonna say who's watching them, but I'm thinking surely the people that watch them in the evening are gonna watch them in a tea time anyway. Or at lunchtime anyway, like we're gonna watch Liverpool at any time. So
it's a common sense thing, isn't it? Really, like just in terms of just saying when you're saying, can't the broadcaster have a conversation where you just flip some of the fixture times around? So when you're doing the broadcast times and you just flip them around and say we're playing the evening game instead of the lunchtime game, it just makes complete sense. It would be remiss if we didn't talk about free subs 1 point, by the way.
That's the funniest thing I've heard this year, you know, free subs 1 point. When I spit bars in a ring,
man, I go hard, last stand, tan. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. When I spit bars in a ring,
man, I go hard, last stand, tan. So, Anik, you want to say something about that?
No, I wasn't going to specifically say it on the three subs 1 point. I was more so going to state my view on it, because on the Klopp stuff, because I think what Klopp is saying, he's been consistent throughout. You know, he said it after the Man City game. He said it after the Leicester game. He said it after the midweek Champions League game. I think it's a case of every other fan picks up on it as soon as we lose.
Yeah.
Obviously, Des Kelly's comments didn't help. And they sort
He came prepared, didn't he? Like,
he came prepared. He came ready. And it's a case of, you know, Klopp has been consistent. He's been saying this the whole time. It's not just a case of him, you know, wildly throwing his toys out of the pram now that, you know, we haven't won. But I think also on that, I think what Klopp is saying is what a lot of the other managers are thinking. And it's only Klopp and Pep that will come out and say these sort of things.
Because, and Ollie, by the way.
And Ollie said it as well. So I don't think it's a case of Klopp's thinking different to every other manager and he's just to his advantage. I think all the other managers are thinking the same as well, which no one really seems to pick up on.
Yeah. And like Klopp said, there were 15 or 16 managers in that meeting that said they wanted 5 subs. So I don't like this whole rhetoric around Liverpool being crybabies or the manager being a crybaby, because everybody is saying it. Ollie's gone and said it, and that's gone under the radar. Nobody's really brought that up. Look at the position. Yeah, man, you aren't too far with us, but look at the position they're in currently compared to where they should be. Like, why are people not making that as big of a fuss? And just to go on to Ellis's point quickly as well, people don't factor in travel. We had to travel down to Brighton. So we travelled back, then travelled down to Brighton, and then have to travel back up the next day. Like, it's a lot. Or the same day even. It's a lot for the players to cope with.
Yeah, I think you both hit the nail on the head there, really. It's a lot for the players to cope with, and the fact that people only really do pick up on it when we've lost the game or we've dropped points, and they really kind of amplify that situation where, in realistic terms, it's something that Klopp just bangs on about for the past 18 months. You know, he's gone on about the Christmas schedule since he was, like, in his first season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't new to us.
He said that he couldn't understand why they play so many games. He couldn't understand why there's two knockout competitions. And to this day, I don't understand why there's two knockout competitions. For the life of me, I don't understand. I don't understand why the EFL believe that they're so important that they can't move a game backward or forward so that Liverpool can play and then go to Dubai or whatever.
World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the life, I don't know why in England that they feel that they're so important that they can't leave traditions alone. Like, fam, your traditions hasn't served you well since 1966. Like, everyone is leaving you in your wake in football. Why are you still doing the same things? What is happening? Like, sometimes I sit down and I watch English football, I'm thinking, what is going on? Like, why do you not think you're the best of the best? And anyway, that's a topic for another day. I know why, but we're not going to get into that today.
And one last thing just on that.
Come on, Mark.
Hashtag abolish what, Chris? Go ahead.
As a hashtag abolish the League Cup.
Yeah, definitely.
Man. Honestly. But just a quick point. So we remember Ajax getting to the semi-finals of the Champions League. They postponed the Eagles or the Dutch League for that weekend just to allow Ajax that advantage. So why can't the English team, similar to what El said, move games around dependent just to give themselves the best chance of having continental success or being powerhouses? Like, we claim this is the best league in the world, and ideally to me it is. But when you're not performing at a high level in continental football or in international football, then what can you say? What standout qualities do you have?
Yeah, I think everyone will be crying with the Euros next year. And I think, in my opinion as well, I don't think an English team will win the Champions League this season either, just because of the scheduling issues. But unfortunately, that is all we've got time for this week on this week's episode of Cop and Fraggers, powered by Social Media Group. If you do want more content from the boys with everything we've discussed today and a lot more stuff going forward with the fixture pile-up we've just discussed, then please do head over to our Patreon page, that is patreon.com/CopandFraggers, and subscribe today. But from me, Chris, Els, Mark and Anik, we'll see you next week.
Thanks.